Good morning. So I don't know if you were paying attention to the hymn we sang. I imagine it was chosen because it talks about in the beginning was the Word, and that was the topic that I've got today. But it really said there's a before the beginning. That's more important than the Word. We're going to focus on the Word, and it's not bird. Well, it might be bird. I mean, you'll tell me. You never know. A long time ago, I don't remember how many years ago it was, I was invited to give a lecture in Amsterdam to a group called Children of Holocaust Survivors. And these are just what it says. I mean, these are, at the time, they're probably in their 60s now maybe, but at the time they were much younger, and their parents had lived through the Holocaust, managed to survive it in one way or another, and they get together to, I don't know, to just sort of build a community. Their lives are unique. If your parents were Holocaust survivors, you suffer a unique second-generation post-traumatic stress kind of existence. And they had me come to give some talk. I don't remember what it was. I was staying in an apartment just a few houses up or a few buildings up from where Anne Frank had been hiding, if you know her story, right, where she hid from the Nazis. And I get a phone call, and it's some guy from Israel, who I don't know, who said he heard I was lecturing in Amsterdam, and he wanted to come and see me. And he'd flown from Israel to Amsterdam, and what's a good time to drop by? So that was a good time to drop by. So I said, well, I'm in the apartment. I'm not doing anything. So he gets in a cab, and he comes over, and he walks in. I don't know this guy from a hole in the wall. And he says to me, I only have one question. And he says, what is the essence of Judaism? And I gave him I had no idea. If someone had asked me this and said, you know, come back in a few days, I would have written something like an essay or something. But I didn't know that's what he was going to ask. I didn't know why he was there. And I just blurted out, without thinking, Teshuvah and Tikkun. So if you don't know Hebrew, that's meaningless to you. But what it means in Hebrew is, for some reason, the essence of Judaism for me at that moment was Teshuvah, returning to your true nature, and then Tikkun, healing the world from that place of authenticity. So this guy goes, oh, thank you, and he leaves. That's it. I didn't have to make him, you know, a hot beverage. And, you know, I never saw him again, never heard from him again. So I was struck with not so much the fact that he was flying all the way from Israel to see me. I was assuming he was going to do something else while he was in Amsterdam. I know where the red light district was, and I figured that's where he ran off to. But I have no proof of that. That's, you know, I'm just saying. But what struck me was being asked that pointed question in a situation where you're so focused and just experiencing an answer arising without any forethought. Because I literally gave it no thought. I just blurted it out. The same thing happens in the context of Zen Buddhism. Let me clarify that. Rinzai school of Zen Buddhism, which is koan oriented, you know, where the Zen master gives you a puzzle. It's not a good definition of koan, but gives you this puzzle to solve, and you're supposed to solve it in the immediacy of hearing the puzzle presented to you. So one of the classic ones is, what is the sound of one hand clapping? Right? It says, everyone knows the sound of two hands clapping. What's the sound of one hand clapping? I was lecturing in Delaware a couple weeks ago, and someone raised that issue, and they said, it's in one of your books. And I said, really, what's the answer? And they read this passage out of my Loving Kindness book, and it talks about being in this museum in Cleveland where they had this big Buddha statue, and the Buddha has one hand out like this and one hand pointing to the earth. And I saw somebody put a can of Coke on the up upraised palm while he tied his shoe. And then in the book, I said, oh, now I know the sound of one hand clapping. It's the Buddha going, I could have had a V8 or something like that. But it arises out of the immediacy of the moment. My favorite one is, show me your face before your parents were born. Show me your face before your parents were born. And you've already thought about it too long. The idea, it's just got to come out. Something happens in that moment. And whatever it is that's happening is an ending of thought, an ending of rational, or actually an ending of anything that the brain seems to be doing, which sounds very strange. It is very strange. I had that experience recently. Just a few months ago, I was with my Hindu teacher, Prasanna, who lives in California. I went to visit him. And we were just talking about spiritual practice, and he asked me what I do, blah, blah, blah. And one of the things that I really take refuge in is the practice of self-inquiry that's taught by Ramana Maharshi, a Hindu saint who died in 1950. And what he says, Ramana says, is, periodically, you just ask yourself, when you notice yourself thinking or feeling something, or even having a physical sensation, Ramana says, just ask yourself, who's noticing? Who's noticing the thought? Who's noticing the emotion? Who's noticing the physical sensation? And the idea is that at some point, you will realize there's what the hymn said, there's sort of a space behind the noticing, which Ramana calls the I, the I behind the I, the eternal subject, the singular, non-dual I of the universe. That is who we really are. So I'm talking to him, we're chatting back and forth about this, and then all of a sudden, Prasanna says to me, are you? And I was just stopped. It's like I hit a wall or something. And, you know, I was asking the question, who am I or what am I? Because that's what Ramana Maharshi says. And then my teacher says, are you? But he said it the way the guy coming from Israel said, you know, what's the essence of Judaism? When he visited me in Amsterdam, it just, everything stops and then something comes out. Except in this case, everything stopped and nothing came out. I was aware, now none of this makes sense. And I can't make sense out of it. And language is only going to confuse it more. And I really shouldn't talk about it at all. Thank you very much. But I'm trying to make sense out of it, trying to understand it from not the point of view of it actually happening, but recollecting it afterwards. So my experience of what happened was, there was a complete turning off of all thought. No feeling, no sensation, no nothing, but an awareness that everything was off. So it wasn't that I couldn't, you know, when he says, are you, it's not that I couldn't find the words, there were no words. It's not that I couldn't think about it, it's there was no I to think. There was just a stopping. And out of that stopping came an embarrassment. And this is always what happens to me when I'm about to become enlightened. Exactly. I become, because like she said, I, and then I go, oh, I, Rami, and then that ruins it. My ego came back into play, and then I lost it. But for a brief span of time, I don't know if it was an hour or a split second, but it was really a split second. Time stopped, I stopped, everything was just gone. Except this awareness of nothing. I don't know if this makes any sense to you or not. The language really is all off, but that's the best I can do at the moment. This awareness of nothing. And then my life started again. So the hymn is correct. In the beginning was the Word, but before the Word, there was something else. So in most mystical traditions, the something else is in one way or another referred to as nothing. So in Hebrew, it's ayin, which literally means nothing. In Hinduism, they talk about Brahman, but you can't say anything about Brahman, so Brahman becomes a kind of nothing. The Buddha talks in terms of nothingness, that kind of, because they're trying to avoid putting a label on it. But there's something before the word. So we're going to come back to this, but what I want you to do is to just sit with that something before the word. So I'm going to walk you through this. And then I'm going to ask you to write on the card three words. And I'll remind you as we do it. But the first word is going to be without, and as soon as I tell you, you're going to think about it, and it's nothing I can do. But the first word is the word that guides your life. Now, if something just popped into your mind, just write it down right now. All right, if nothing pops into your mind, hang on with me and we'll do the exercise. But sometimes you don't need the exercise, you just know. And if you got a word and you didn't like it, just write it down anyway, because it's an honest word as opposed to one that you feel more comfortable with. The second word I'm going to ask you to write down is the word for this church. If there were a word that spoke to this place, or of this place, articulated this place, what would that word be? And again, if something comes to you, just quickly write it down. And then the third word is the word for our time. And I don't, that's all I'm going to say, because you can take it a couple of different ways, but we'll deal with that later. So the first word is the word for my life. Second is the word for this place, this community, this fellowship. And the third word is the word for our time. If you got nothing, or even if you did, do the exercise and see if the same word comes out for you. But here's the exercise. So just sit comfortably and close your eyes. And just become aware of yourself sitting in the chair. Just feel your body resting on the chair. Feel the back of the chair supporting the back of your body. Feel the seat of the chair supporting your butt. Just become aware of your body in the chair. And realize that the you that is aware of your body in the chair is not itself in the chair. If that makes sense, fine. If it doesn't make sense, also fine. But see if you can notice that the one who's noticing your body in the chair isn't actually in the chair. It's looking at the body in the chair. Then become aware of feelings. Whatever happens to be floating through your brain at the moment. And notice that the one who is aware of the feelings isn't actually the feeling or even having the feeling. It's just noticing the feeling, almost as if it were happening to somebody else. And then the third is with thoughts. Notice the thoughts, and if you don't distinguish between thoughts and feelings, don't worry about it, but notice the thoughts that are arising as you're listening to me. And realize that the one who is noticing is not the one thinking the thought. There is an awareness of the body, an awareness of the emotions, an awareness of thought that isn't body, emotion, or thought. Now, from that awareness, give me three words. What's the word that speaks to your life? What's the word that speaks to this fellowship? What's the word that speaks for this moment, this time? And then when you're done with that, you can just put the cards down.
What is
What were the three again? Yeah. So the first one is the word that speaks to your life. Second one, the word that speaks to this community. And the third is the word that speaks to this time. Okay, then you can just put that down. And I'm going to have my lovely assistant collect the pens. So, yeah. No, they can hold on to the paper, but you can collect the pens so we don't lose them. Okay. Let's just deal with the biblical passage first. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, the Word was God. You know, that whole John 1:1. I don't know why English Bibles translate logos, which is the Greek, as word. There must be some history to it, and I just don't know what it is. But it's a terrible translation. In the Greek, it says, in the beginning was logos. And logos is closer, and this is why the Chinese translate John saying, in the beginning was Tao. Logos is closer to Tao. Logo is closer to Dharma, not in the Buddhist sense of Dharma, which means the Buddha's teaching, but in the Hindu sense of Dharma, which means the way of the universe. In the beginning was maybe nature, or the law of physics, or it's not a supernatural revelation of any sort. It's something intrinsic, because this is what logos is, something intrinsic to the world of the physical world that allows the physical world to manifest. So in the beginning there was, you know, whatever you want to say, logos, Tao, Dharma, or word. But that begs the question, so what was before the beginning? So in the Hebrew Bible, the opening line of Genesis is, with a beginning God created the heavens and the earth. It doesn't say in the beginning. The Greek in John says in the beginning was the word. The Hebrew in Genesis doesn't actually say in the beginning, even though every English Bible says that. It's absolutely incorrect, and any 5-year-old Hebrew speaker would tell you what's wrong. Just so you hear the difference, the Hebrew in Genesis 1 is B'Reishit, Baro Elohim et HaShemayim ve'et HaAretz, B'Reishit, as opposed to in the beginning, which is Ba'Reishit. It's just a different vowel in each case. When it's Ba'Reishit, it means in the beginning, but in the Bible, it's B'Reishit, which means by means of a beginning or with the beginning, or in my own idiosyncratic translation, it's once upon a time. But it doesn't mean there's a fixed beginning. And the commentators of the Hebrew Bible, the rabbis, would say there are lots of beginnings. God created multiple times, multiple universes. This is ours. But they also said, these ancient rabbis, you know, if you're going to say in a beginning or with a beginning or even in the beginning, it begs the question, what comes before the beginning? In the Bible, if you look at it in English, certainly it doesn't tell you. And the Hebrew Bible doesn't tell you either unless you desperately want it to. And that means when you read into the text something that really isn't there. Which is, of course, what religion does. That's what religion is. So the rabbis look at the Hebrew and the beginning of the text. Before you get the B, there's a little letter Aleph, the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet, that precedes the Bet, which is the B for B. And in actual fact, it just means verse 1. But they take it to mean that's what's before the beginning. You follow what I'm saying? That there is, with a beginning or in a beginning, what's before a beginning? It's this little tiny letter Aleph that you can barely see. Why that? Because the Aleph is silent. And again, that's what our hymn was saying. That there is this silence preceding everything. There's a silence preceding your word as well as every word. There's an unknowability that is, I don't know if you want to say it's the source of everything or the ground of everything, depends which theologian you want to follow. But there's something ineffable, inarticulatable, that is at the beginning of the beginning. Okay, I mean, already, you know, before the beginning. And then you can say, well, what's before that? And then what's before that? But eventually, you'll outgrow that stage. And you just realize that it's not literal, and you should just know it's trying to put you in that frame of mind that my teacher Prasanna put me in when he said, are you? That when you are asked the question, what's before the beginning, and the answer is nothing, the intellectual answer is nothing, can you experience that space of nothing? Is this making any sense? Sort of following what I'm saying? Out of that space comes your word. Most of the time, however, you're not allowed to go to that space. Most of the time, you are, from very young, you are given a word that's your word, and it better damn well be your word. And you're right, you're told who you are, you're told what you're about. And then as you go through the rest of your life, there may be some change, you know, in what you're told. You may have been told one thing by your parents, and another thing by your teachers, and another thing by your bosses, another thing by your politicians, and another thing by your clergy. But you begin to forget, if you ever even recognized, the actual word that was yours. So there's this teaching that unless and until you reclaim your word, you cannot live authentically. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. This is an experiment for myself and for you. But when another teacher took me through this little exercise and said, what's your word? I knew exactly what my word was, just like the guy coming from Israel asking, what's the essence of Judaism? I knew the essence of Judaism was. Just like Prasanna saying, are you? I didn't have an answer, but I went to the answer, right? I experienced the answer. So my word, I think this is the, I'm trying to find a way not to color your thinking here, but so let me just say my word, and then I'm going to ask for some words, and then we're going to do the rest in the talk back session. But my word, when I was asked by this teacher in one of those settings, like, what's your word? You know, it's not like, well, it's not like what I'm doing with you, right? It was just, what's the word? And you know, after a second, the word, of course, is always bird. But before I went to, you know, bird is the word. I go to bird, which my three-year-old now sings all the time, my little grandson. Before that, I knew instantly what my word was. My word is wisdom. So then I thought, well, how do I know that? I mean, I just knew it, so it really wasn't a question. But you go back into your normal everyday mind, and in my everyday mind says, well, prove it then. Show me, you know, where that makes sense. And what immediately followed the blurting out of wisdom was my Enneagram. So I don't know if any of you are into Enneagram, and we can't do Enneagram here in a two-second thing, but Enneagram is a personality investigatory tool to try to get to the heart of who you are. And there's 9 possibilities, and it gets pretty complicated, but oftentimes when you discover which of your 9 you are, there are words that are attached to it. And I'm a 5. So if that means anything to anybody, I'm a 5. 5 is the wisdom seeker. So I know I'm a 5 not because wisdom is my word, therefore I'm a 5. I know I'm a 5 because I studied Enneagram with a bunch of different people, and I took all these exams and these tests and these things that tell you what you are, and I keep coming out a 5. And then I read the analysis of what a 5 is, and it always fits me to a T. Basically, and this is from, I think, Richard Rohr, the Catholic priest Richard Rohr says, when a 5 has a problem, the 5 goes to the library. You got to look it up in a book. There must be somebody who thought of this before, and they'll tell you what to do. Wisdom is out there. You know, like Fox Mulder in X-Files, the truth is out there, so wisdom is out there. You just got to go find the right book, the right teacher, and that defines my whole life. So I knew wisdom was my word. Then the question is, are you living your life in harmony with your word? So I'm asking you that. I mean, look at your word, your own personal word, and then ask yourself the follow-up question. If this is your true north, use a compass analogy, if this is your true north, are you moving in that direction or are you veering off from it? Where are you true to that word and where, and I'm not asking you to tell us in right out loud, but where are you true to your word, where are you false to your word? Where are, you know, like John says, you know, the word is God. Where does the word become your ground of being? And where are you worshiping an idol that isn't your true word? I mean, that's the follow-up question is no less important than the catalyst question. You know, what's your word? Because then you'll know, and you should be able to tell instantly, if it's the right word, then you should know pretty much instantaneously, if you don't think about it, you should know pretty much instantaneously whether or not you're following your word, whether or not you're being true to your word. Now, if the answer is no, don't assume there's something wrong with you. Also, invite the possibility you got the wrong word, because you've been fed words your entire life, right? So the word that may have popped out may have been the word that a parent gave you decades ago. It may have been a word for someone else wearing some kind of cloak of authority gave you and said, this is your word. It may be a communal word that you have to accept, because if you don't, somehow something bad is going to happen to you. So that's not the word we're looking for. We're looking for the word that comes out of your own spaciousness, that space before the beginning, before the word, that silence before the word. The word that comes out of that silence is the word we're looking for. So if you find that you're not living according to your word, before you assume there's something wrong with you, at least entertain the possibility there's something wrong with your word. And one way to do that is to say, okay, I'll ask myself a different question. Rather than try to go into that spacious openness, silence, and say, what's the word? Look at the course of my life and say, okay, let me look at how I've actually lived. Is there a word that speaks to that? Gesundheit. And is it the same word, or is it a different word? And if it's the same word, fine. But if it's a different word, which word is the truer word? The word that your life reflects, or the word that maybe came out of the spaciousness? If you say, no, the true word is the word coming out of the direction of my own life, the way I've lived my own life, then that's the truer word. But if you look at the way you've lived your life and the word that's associated with that isn't, it may be true to the way you lived your life, but doesn't have that power of the word that came out of spaciousness, then maybe you've been, I don't want to be too harsh, but you've been following the wrong path, right? You've been following the wrong word. You've been living the wrong life. And here's an opportunity to, well, in my case, to go and eat until I forget about the problem, or if you're more intelligent than I am, to revamp what you do and put it more in accord with your founding word than with the word that you've inherited. So why does this matter? So maybe it doesn't. Right? You know, all this spiritual stuff maybe makes a difference, maybe doesn't make a difference. Personally, I think it matters, because I think that a life, what I know, I lost the phrase, a life unexamined is not, or the unexamined life is not worth living, you know, something like that. Or know yourself, you know, that kind of teaching from the Oracle of Delphi, that we have to, I don't know if the word is continually or at least periodically, make time to see how authentic our lives are. And this is one way to do that. And not just a way to do it, like I read it in a book, and there is now a book on it. but it's for business. It's got nothing to do with your own personal life. I don't even know what the book is called, but I know that someone's taken this idea and turned it into a marketing tool for businesses. So anything can be corrupted. But I think it matters more than just as an intellectual exercise. It really shocked me when I got the word wisdom. Because A, my initial reaction was, uh-oh, that's true, I'm not. You know, am I living true to that? And it brought up all kinds of places where I'm really veering from the word, because I know that's the right word. Not just because of Enneagram, I just know that's the right word. So it gave me an opportunity to then say, am I living out wisdom, or the quest for wisdom, or however you would understand your word, am I living that out in the everyday, in the everydayness of my life? And where am I doing it, and where am I not doing it? And what's the difference? What difference does it make? What am I experiencing when I'm living true to the word, and what am I experiencing when I'm living falsely with regard to the word? And I sense in my own life there's a huge difference. There's a effortlessness when I'm living in harmony with my word, and a convolutedness when I'm not. There's a simplicity, an honesty, an authenticity when I'm living in accordance with my word, and a phoniness when I'm not. But the phoniness is not even, doesn't even get at it. My life becomes very convoluted. I'm trying to always, I don't know if the word is cover or the word is lie or the word, I don't know what word you want to use, but I'm always masking when I'm not living authentically in order to make it look better than it really is. And there's no masking necessary when I am living authentically. But I didn't know what authentic was. I mean, you could have an internal sense of it without a word, but I didn't have a clarity of what my authenticity was until this word popped into my head in response to the question. So I gotta stop. So what we're gonna do in TalkBack, I don't know what the competition is today, so if you wanna stay for this one, what we're gonna do is voluntarily, not go around the room and say, okay, what's your word? But voluntarily, for those who want to share the words you wrote down. But I want to talk not only about the personal word, which is something, if this exercise speaks to you at all, this is something you'll think about for a long time. So we can't just, oh yeah, I got it, it's over, we all clap and we're moving on. The other two words are easier to deal with in this kind of setting. What's the word for this fellowship? And what's the word for our time? Those are things that are, I was going to say equally important. Those are things that are both very important. Whether they're equally important or not, I'm not 100% sure. So that's what we're going to do in TalkBack. But I just want to end with this. So look at the word you wrote for yourself. Just look at it right now and says, is it right or is it wrong? Just whatever popped into your head, right or wrong. And that's, just keep that in mind when we come back and later and talk about these. And if you do go to the other thing, then just think about it on your own afterwards. But don't call me. Okay, thank you.